They're primary. They're primary, and 802.11 is part 15, which means that it has to accept any harmful interference. The only people, actually I say primary, they're secondary. Of course, the U.S. government is primary on 2.4.
Okay, thanks for that question. Lynn, also, let's announce the camera thing again, which I noticed that you're only pointing at me.
Well, I'm moving it around some.
Move it around a little bit more, because every time I look at the screen, I see my face, and, you know, I don't think the people need to see that much. but we're broadcasting the show live over the Internet in many ways.
Look what you've done. We've got, like, dueling cameras in the studio.
Now Jeff has his camera out. Okay. Give us the URL again.
Yeah, it's jawga.com.
Okay, and if you go there, you'll see pictures of this program. And now Adrian has his camera out, too. Boy, this is really something. You'll see pictures of us doing the radio program here live on WBAI New York. Again, if you're tuning in for the Personal Computer Show, regretfully, those fine folks are not here tonight. They will be back next week. So feel free to tune in.
The Haitian Freedom Special is postponed until it comes back.
Yeah, if you somehow read the Daily News today and saw an announcement for that, well, that's being taped, so that will be broadcast at a later date. I'm sure we'll have all kinds of announcements about that. Okay, again, we have Adrian Limo here with us in the studio on the eve of his sentencing in federal court tomorrow. If you have any questions, comments, remarks, that kind of a thing, please give us a call, 212-209-2900. And let's take this listener phone call. Good evening. You're on the air. Oh, that person lost their patience. Let's go over to this line. And good evening. You're on the air.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, I have a question about Wi-Fi, but first I have a comment for the gentleman that's going to be sentenced tomorrow and about that dollar amount that the feds use, because I had a case with the feds also, and I think I was charged with illegal use of access into the license. I actually had a couple of cases before them. In the Eastern District of New York. And actually, the feds don't have jurisdiction unless it's over $5,000. So they will add to that, find ways to build up the dollar amount. And in my case, they actually levied a fine against us for me and my brother for, I think, $300,000 each. And the only reason that we haven't had to pay that is because after we got out of prison, because we went to trial, we went into the court transcripts and brought out the fact that the so-called victims in the case testified that the insurance paid for anything, everything, so they didn't take a loss. So that restitution has been trying to contact me for like 2 years after that, trying to collect that $300,000.
Well, there's really, I got to interject here. There is no $5,000 threshold that kicks in federal jurisdiction. The feds can take the Secret Service, FBI, any other federal law enforcement agency can take action, criminal action against anyone in a fraud case, even if there was no dollar amount alleged. In my case, and I'm quoting from my sentencing report, it says there were no victims in the offense. That means $0 amount. And
I was still charged. It affects interstate commerce.
Everything affects interstate commerce. If you look and see how they stretch the interstate commerce clause, I mean, they're masters at stretching that. So everything is affected under interstate commerce. So that's not even an issue.
I do have one piece of advice for the gentleman, though. Before he, no one in the federal court even pays attention to this, but the PSI, the pre-sentencing report, if there's anything that's incorrect in that, challenge it. A lot of people don't like to do that because it has to do, it doesn't affect the sentence or anything, but it will affect you once you get in terms of where you allocate it and your status and stuff like that. So if there's anything incorrect in the PSI, challenge it ahead of time. And the question I have about Wi-Fi is, I have 802.11b built into a handheld computer that I have, and I'm pulling a signal from, actually I don't know where it's coming from. This is how I go online. Everywhere I go, I pull a signal from everywhere. But when I'm at home, I'm pulling it from, I believe, an industrial park next to me. Is it possible for me to buy a repeater and boost their signal so that I can get it make the signal stronger and put it all throughout my home?
Yes.
How would I do that? Because when I go on, it says Linksys. There are two of them. One of them says Linksys, and the other one says Warehouse. So how do
let's assume you have permission to access their network first. Assuming you had their permission, you could set up a couple of wireless access points with a bridge between them.
Right.
And it would effectively be, you could configure it to basically be a repeater.
Okay.
And Lynn could probably go into that in more detail, couldn't you, Lynn?
Yeah, I would say the Linksys product might not be the best way to go. It's going to be the easiest one to repeat. But there's a product out called a DWL 900 Plus. And it, I know for sure it has a repeater mode, and it repeats anything from anybody. You just bind to the MAC address.
Product?
Sorry, repeat that?
Who's the product? Who's the manufacturer?
I think it's D-Link.
D-Link, right?
Yeah.
And so I wouldn't actually have to be able to have access to their system to code it or anything like that.
It just looks for the MAC. You just have you. It scans the area, and it says, which of these networks do you want to repeat? And you click on the MAC address of the one you want to repeat, and from there on out, that one just repeats everything that one hears.
Oh, great.
With a really good antenna, you can repeat that quite a distance.
Assuming you have...
Permission.
Of course.
Well, he wouldn't want to do it without permission.
We're always going to make that assumption. But thanks very much for that phone call. And again, 212-209-2900 is our phone number. This is Off the Hook. We're on until 9 o'clock tonight. In studios, Adrian Lamo. Mike, you have something to say?
He could also, I think, just buy a better antenna for his wireless card.
Yeah, that's a lot of times that makes all the difference in the world.
It's a low-tech solution.
But he is trying to repeat it around the house, he said.
Okay, fine.
And good evening. You're on the air. Okay. Another person losing patience there. Good evening. You're on the air.
Holy God, did I make it on?
You're on the air, yes.
Wow. I have a few things to say, and okay. I actually wrote them down so I wouldn't forget.
Good. Where are you calling from, first of all?
Upstate New York.
Upstate New York. Okay, what's on your mind?
First of all, I've never gotten to meet Rebel, and I don't think I want to.
Let's not talk about that.
That guy needs to stop calling because I can never get through.
Okay, well, you got through tonight, so let's not talk about him. Let's continue.
And also, like a month ago, I sent in an email because I want to be a speaker at the Fifth Hope.
Okay, and you haven't heard anything yet?
No, never heard anything.
Yes, well, we probably have it on file, and we just started processing them last night, in fact. So you will be hearing something soon, guaranteed.
Right.
And those people who are interested in being speakers, email 5h-speakers@2600.com. Again, the Fifth Hope is taking place July 9th to 11th here in New York City. And if you're interested in volunteering in whatever capacity you feel you can volunteer, email 5h-volunteers@2600.com. And for more information on the conference, www.hope.net. And I can't tell you how many religious zealots want that domain, but we're holding on to it. Hope.net is ours. Okay, what else is on your mind?
Well, a while back you spoke about how the FBI is getting like more permissions, or they're trying to get more permissions with ISPs to like tap and kind of sniff exactly what people are doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we need to really worry about that a lot more, because even with encryption, I mean, when you're someone's default gateway, you know, it really doesn't matter what they do. You can almost always see what they're doing. You know, I think a good proven method with that is SSH, because you can actually perform a man-in-the-middle attack with that. And if you're not watching carefully, it will tell you that, you know, your remote host's fingerprint has changed, but you can just hit, you know, yeah, I do want to continue, and...
And not just do it too fast and not pay attention to these methods.
So I think, we need to be careful with that and not let the feds get too much access rights. And two, what happens when a social engineer contacts the ISP and tricks them into thinking that they're with the government and they can see exactly what you're doing? So.
Oh, of course, you know, things like that are theoretically possible, and, you know, if it happens, I'd certainly like to know about it.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else?
No, I think that's it.
Okay, thanks for your call.
Yep, thank you.
All right, 212-209-2900. Let's take this call. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yes, just a moment, honey. I'm thinking about the situation in the airports with the tracking devices, tracking system they have.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to me that it would be very easy to thwart these things. Just make a noise generator with a diode and a AAA cell, and then feed this to a tune circuit and an amplifier transistor. It would take two transistors, one AAA cell and a tune circuit. And you could drop these things all over the place and drive them absolutely crazy.
And what do you say to the TSA when they ask just what the hell are you doing?
you just you 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 just you just you just load up your pockets, you drop them on, you know, in the washroom and trash baskets and so forth.
But can you imagine the questioning, if you got stopped by the TSA with a bunch of these things in your pocket? I'm just, you know, your intentions are pure, I give you that, but it could definitely land you on the news.
You can't just take Radio Shack parts and just carry them around and put them places. You're liable to get locked up in federal prison.
Yeah, Bernie knows that. He knows that firsthand. We all know. Jim?
The problem with this is if you have something that's going to be giving out an RFID signal when it gets pinged, is all of a sudden they're going to have all these unusual signals all in one group moving throughout the airport and stopping at every garbage can. Right. Don't you think you'd get picked up before you get too far in?
No, they'll have a switch.
Well, you can simply have a switch, yeah, exactly.
Connect them to a cell phone.
Don't help
them. Okay.
That's right.
That's conspiracy. All right, thanks for that call and for those ideas. We certainly have a lot to mull over now. Again, I want to stress that Adrian Lamo is here, too, and, if you have anything to ask him or advice to give him. Bernie, you've already given some advice. Any other words of advice for somebody on the eve of their sentencing? I know, you know, it makes all the difference in the world that he's out and not in, like you were. I remember seeing you when you were being, held in court and the horrible shape you were in because of the conditions that you were held in. I think it really, as you said, makes all the difference when you're able to, think rationally in the free world before this happens.
Yeah, but it's really not much easier, I don't think, in Adrian's case. The best advice I've heard from many attorneys who were former federal prosecutors themselves, my best attorney was, he said you have to be as contrite as you can possibly be. Just you know, and I think Adrian is sincerely contrite about what he did, what he pleaded to doing, and he just has to show that he's sorry to the judge. The judge wants to hear. It's really an experience of a beratement. The prosecution will berate you. The judge will read a bunch of charges, and you may not feel that you're guilty of some of them, but you still have to say, yes, I did this. Yes, I apologize. I was the worst person in the world. Whatever. You've got to convince the judge that you really are sincere, and I believe Adrian is sincerely believing that he stepped over the line. I truly believe that.
Yeah,
but he's got to convince the judge of that, and the prosecutor is going to paint him as the devil incarnate, and the judge is going to want to hear contrition.
But, you know, Bernie, in all fairness, I was talking to Adrian for a while now before the show. I don't think he's going to cop to anything that he doesn't feel responsible for. If he is called the devil incarnate, I don't think he's going to say, yes, I am. You know, it's a question of being honest. And I think they can tell when you're being honest and when you're just saying what they want to hear. And in Adrian's case, I think he's, this is how he really feels.
So do I.
Reading like Milton and things, the devil doesn't seem all that bad.
You're going to have to answer to that in front of some court someplace, I'm sure, but not on this show.
But the caller who called in and said you should try to contest some inaccuracies in the pre-sentence investigation report. I imagine, Adrian, you've already seen your PSI report?
Yeah, to an extent.
Okay. Do you agree with absolutely everything that it says?
It's pretty much sticking to the facts. There's nothing in there that's untrue, and there's certainly not anything in there worth contesting. It effectively describes my course of conduct. And
well, that's good, because unfortunately, if there was something in there that wasn't true,
it'd be a little bit late to worry about it.
Yeah.
You really have to bring it up at the sentencing hearing. That's when you have to bring it up. It's your last chance. If there was anything in there that wasn't accurate or wasn't true, if you challenge these things, it makes you appear as you're not as contrite, and what are you going to do? So I'm glad that yours seems fairly accurate, and that's a good thing, and you don't have to quibble about anything that's in there. That's a good thing in your side.
And it's something of a cliche, but at least in this context, I like to think that actions will speak louder than words. I mean, it's only been 6 or 7 months since my arrest, but I like to think that during that period of time, I've demonstrated as well as I can that I'm not just waiting for an opportunity to go back into a life of crime.
I'm
in school full time. I've been writing for my school paper. I've been freelancing for a number of publications, and I'm really happy doing these things. Mm-hmm. I don't feel like there's
I think
anything
your actions
making
will
for my life.
Yeah, this is not your life. This is not something that encompasses everything you do. This is merely one chapter. But I'm curious, do you have any idea why, as opposed to cases like Bernie, cases like Kevin, you weren't treated like enemy of the state and held in solitary confinement and treated horribly? Do you think they're being fairer with you?
I like to think that it's really part of, you know, I alluded to the fact that security, prosecutions, and internet culture are evolving processes, and I like to think that this case is, to an extent, the sum of what's come before it in a lot of ways, that, you know, the government has no reason to want to repeat mistakes. You know, they know what works, what doesn't, and what's reasonably, reasonable, and I think that they're treading around that, and also, I like to think that the fact that I accepted responsibility early and that I really didn't make any effort to avoid that.
Well, you accepted responsibility early than almost anybody because you did it before you were even charged. I mean, one thing in your career is you've always been upfront about what exactly you did in the hopes that, obviously, they would take that seriously and fix the problem. You know, and it's just unfortunate that in this case they took their time fixing the problem, and then they went after you as if you had caused the problem when, in fact, you had just discovered it.
I think at one point, a long time ago, I joked that if one is going to be a federal criminal, one might as well be an honest one. And I'm through being a federal criminal, but I like to think that I'll be able to carry over the latter part into journalism because there's, I think, too little of that around these days.
All right, let's hope so. Again, Adrian Limo here in the studio with us. He's being sentenced tomorrow. Do you know what the range that you can get is?
The plea agreement stipulates a sentence of between 6 to 12 months, and because of the nature of the offense, there are various ways that sentence can be served. It can be served as house arrest. It can be served as community confinement. I can go to jail on weekends. Or I can go to federal prison, and it's my hope that they'll take into account a lot of the factors that are existent in this case. The fact that my family needs me, the fact that being around my family has been helpful to everybody involved. It's given me a bit of a new outlook on a lot of things. And it's also the case itself has propelled me to things that I probably wouldn't have done otherwise. I wouldn't have gotten around to enrolling in school, but now that I've had to, I'm enjoying it. Working on my school newspaper staff, I push the envelope in terms of coverage. I like to try and get them to cover things that college newspapers generally don't, but it's one of those rare occasions in life where I genuinely feel like I'm part of a community. Like, I have a vested interest in the future of the paper, of where it goes. I want it to be some place that people consider for news about Sacramento. I want it to not be limited by the fact that it's a college paper.
What's the paper?
The American River Current.
Uh-huh.
The finest source of news in Northern California.
Great. Well, it's good to see you involved in that, and I hope that works out too. 212-209-2900 is our phone number if you have any questions or comments. Let's go over here and take this phone call. Good evening. You're on the air. Go ahead.
How you doing?
How you doing? What's on your mind?
Not much. Just to let you guys know about that D-Link. It's the DWL-900-AP.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you.
I got another thing to mention.
Yes, go ahead.
I don't know if you guys ever heard of the Pringle Can.
Oh, we've heard of the Pringle Can.
The Pringle Can. If you just go around in the city with that, you can pick up so much wireless activity, especially even going through the tunnel.
Uh-huh.
That's just pretty amazing.
That's true.
It actually works better if you use a coffee can, because that silver stuff on the inside of the Pringles can really isn't that great for directing the signal.
Isn't it the same as the coffee can?
Uh-uh. That aluminum-looking stuff on the inside of the can really doesn't work that great.
Don't you think it would be a little bit easier to hide a Pringles can than a coffee can?
Well, it depends on what are you trying to hide from.
Just picking up wire. Say you're just driving in the city, just trying to pick up signal.
Oh, I have a hole mount antenna in the roof of the car. That works much better than any of the above items.
Really?
Yes.
Really?
Okay. Hey, yeah. thanks for your call. Thanks for that advice, and good luck with the Pringle can. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yeah, I guess you're going to be the life of the party, the shower room there.
All right, that's enough of that. Good evening. You're on the air.
When I told the phone company about my
Rebel, you have 30 seconds.
All right,
when
I told the phone company about like what's wrong with, for example, you can call a certain exchange collect, like a cellular phone exchange collect. I social engineered my way to the people who are in charge of, I guess, fraud or investigations or whatever. They didn't arrest me.
Mm-hmm.
They just, you know, they took my advice, and they fixed it. Well, they didn't fix it yet, but they're about to fix it.
All right, thank you.
That proves there's no justice in the world.
Rebel for us there. Good evening. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. I wanted to bring a correction about last week's broadcast. Somebody had mentioned that regarding the Pennsylvania license, your Social Security figured on it.
I apologize. That has changed. It used to be the Social Security number was on Pennsylvania driver's licenses, and they have taken it off since.
Yes, it's a while now. Mm-hmm. And it's fair to say that they have the best motor vehicle across the nation, at least compared to New York.
You're saying that?
They have the best service when it comes to the department.
Oh, the service. Orders. Okay,
oh, yeah.
Well, yeah, you're not going to get any argument with me about that.
All righty.
All right, thanks.
Great show, guys.
Thanks.
Thank you for pointing that out.
Yeah, so what states still do use Social Security numbers on their licenses? Anybody know? Massachusetts, Mike?
No.
They don't have
in Massachusetts, it's an option. You check a box on the form, you get a state random number instead.
So if you don't check the box, you get your Social Security number.
Yeah, I don't know what the default is.
Uh-huh. Yeah, Georgia, you have the option, but you don't have the option not to have your fingerprint put in a 2D barcode on the back of your driver's license.
Fingerprints. Everything is going to be fingerprints in the future. Jeff, how about Jersey? SSNs on licenses?
No, there's no Social Security on it.
Okay, California, Adrian?
Nope, just a California identification number.
Okay. Fantasyland, Jim? Well, I'm sorry, I used all the states up, so...
I'm from New York.
Okay, well, yeah, we know New York doesn't have it. All right, 212-209-2900. Let's take a phone call. Good evening, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hi, guys. I'm sorry. Great show, as usual. I'm, like, really confused because I didn't expect you guys, like, to answer that fast.
Oh, we did.
I have, like, three questions. The first one is, like, somebody been calling me three times now, and it's only four numbers choosing my phone. Has anybody see something like this before?
They're calling your cell phone, your home phone?
My cell phone, and it's only the area code, and two, sometimes three numbers.
Yes, I've seen that. I got a call the other day from somebody from a quasi-telemarketer. Mm-hmm. And it only read 662.
Yeah, they can basically send any number down caller ID or ANI if they have the right equipment. They can do that.
You have the right type of phone line.
Did you pick up and did you find out who was on the other end?
No, nobody answered. Like, I don't know. Like it was weird. Like, it happened like four or five times today.
Uh-huh. What service do you use?
T-Mobile.
T-Mobile. It's, you know, it could be anything. It really could. You need more information. You need to... actually see who's calling and what kind of system they're using.
Okay, the other thing is, like, I'm originally from Egypt, and we used to, like, send, like, email in Arabic all the time. Right now, like, there is no email, like, you cannot read any documents in the web in Arabic. I'm talking about, like, me and a lot of my friends, especially with the Microsoft, like, the browser.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if it's like because September 11 or what or any information about this. I have no idea. Every time you read Arabic, it's like some kind of like hieroglyphic, you know, like some it's weird like font.
Yeah, you have to install Arabic support basically, and if you're using a computer, you know, in Egypt, obviously every computer in Egypt is going to have the support. But someone here who operates a public computer might not have done that. Similarly, if you want to read, you know, Chinese, Japanese, whatever, doesn't use the kind of English alphabet.
All right. Thank you
so
much.
Good luck. And good evening. You're on the air.
Yes.
No. Good evening. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi.
How you doing?
Good. How are you?
What's on your mind?
Actually, I was just calling in and talking about all this fingerprinting. I just thought I'd share a quick story that I recently took a position with network security at a bank part time, and I was unable to be fingerprinted.
What do you mean you were unable to be fingerprinted?
Well, I suffer from a mild hypertension where I get a sweaty fingers, sweaty palms.
Okay.
And they have to, of course, do a background check with the FBI. And I was totally unable to be fingerprinted. They actually had to dismiss me because of it.
You're saying that because of your sweaty palms, you can't get an accurate reading on your fingerprint?
Yes, actually, the guy went through about 25 different cards to try to get me fingerprinted.
And you lost the job. You lost the job because of this.
I lost the job because of that.
Isn't that some kind of handicap that you could, appeal that?
Well, two things. First of all, is that they used an inkless pad in all probability, correct?
They used an ink pad. And they said that was the only technique that they could use.
I was going to say, inkless pads definitely are not to be used when you have some sort of strange fingerprint problem. I know that through my own interesting experiences. And the other thing is, I would think that this would be covered by the Americans with Disabilities Act. You should find a good disability lawyer.
No sweaty palms actually qualifies as a disability, though.
Well, I don't know.
He lost the job because of a medical condition that has no bearing on his job.
No, I agree. It should be. I don't think it is as of now.
Please sue their, you know, what?
Yeah.
Tell us what bank this is so we can boycott them.
Yeah, tell us.
This is MBNA. It's actually a credit card, the credit card company.
I never liked them anyway.
All right. Well, now we know that if you have sweaty palms and you go there, you're going to have a battle on your hands.
I just thought it was interesting that maybe I was just like a natural-born criminal. I couldn't leave fingerprints.
What happens if you get arrested? You know, do they have to let you go if they can't take your fingerprints?
I don't know, because this guy used to be the guy that was taking the fingerprints was like an ex-police officer,
uh-huh.
And he had, you know, he said in 30 years is the first time he's ever come across this.
Oh, I find that hard to believe. Yeah. I really do.
It happened to me, Emmanuel.
You have sweaty palms too? I never knew that.
Well, yeah, I was at one point I was in a secret service office here in Philadelphia,
uh-huh.
And Special Agent Tom Varney literally tried to fingerprint me dozens of times. It was like 20 or 30 times. And he was screaming obscenities at me that I was doing this on purpose. They just weren't coming out.
What were you doing on purpose?
I was a little bit nervous and my palms were sweating. But
uh-huh.
he was irate because these prints were not coming out, and he was just disgusted that he couldn't get good prints from me.
Well, that was the exact case with this guy. You know, he was like, well, you know, when I was a cop, we'd break their arms if we couldn't do this.
Yeah.
Know. Stuff like that. So
that's nice to know.
Listen, it's very important that you do not commit a crime, because even though they can't get your fingerprint, it sounds like they're going to get your DNA.
Yeah, probably. You know,
it is possible to intentionally, you know, mess up fingerprinting by smudging it, but it doesn't sound like the guy in the phone wanted to do that.
Smudging is one thing. That means there's movement of your finger. You can do things like that.
No, it definitely wasn't smudging, because he couldn't even get past my thumb on one hand. Because
the newer systems they use in more advanced booking departments in federal and state and some local jurisdictions, it's a glass plate that you put your hand on, and there's no ink involved, and that should read your prints fine if you're sweaty or not.
Yeah, I have seen that. That just goes by the oils on your
Barney,
skin.
The system that they're using for people coming into the country, would that be messed up by this kind of sweaty palm syndrome?
I haven't been subjected to it, but I assume it's the glass plate thing, where it's very much like a computer scanner that you it's a glass plate, you lay the document on it, except you put your fingers on it.
Right.
And it does your whole hand in one shot. All of your prints at once.
So sweaty palm isn't going to affect that?
If anything, it might make it better. I don't know. But unless you were like dripping and the water, the sweat was all, it would probably still work fine.
Great imagery there. Yes, Jim.
The NYPD uses a computer system which uses the glass screen. And number one, it has a lot of internal computer glitches. Number two, although you do take a full palm print at one shot, you do take the individual fingers one by one on the glass screen.
Okay, Adrian.
This may be a sign that times are changing in terms of their tolerance of difficulties fingerprinting people. The feds here in New York I'd lost count of the number of times they had to redo my fingerprinting. And they were doing it on the glass screen, oddly enough, and for some reason it just wasn't working out. But apart from a few points where my fingers were bending a little bit oddly as they tried to fit them into place, they were pretty nice about it. And in fact, on a tangentially related note, the U.S. Marshals actually let me retake my mugshot until I thought it looked pretty. So.
You're kidding. Really? I didn't know you could get to do that.
So, you know, it may be that we're coming into a time of kinder, gentler processes, or maybe they're just having a slow day. I don't know.
Bush was right.
Are you allowed to smile?
Yeah.
You can smile in a mugshot?
They let me. I mean, they like Kevin Paulson. Why wouldn't they let me?
Yeah, I guess. Jeff?
Are we going to see it on the smoking gun? Or?
Somebody has to get on the ball and file that FOIA request.
All right.
Point or taken. Hack into their system, I guess.
I can't condone that.
Thanks for that phone call.
All right, thanks a lot. Great show, guys.
Thank you. 212-209-2900 here with Adrian Lamo for the next half hour or so.
Is the mugshot a digital process now, or...?
Yeah, it was done entirely on computer when I was at the U.S. Marshal's office. And mind you, I had to be processed a total of 3 times until they decided I was good and surrendered it. It sort of took on some irony after a while. I had to do it once with the Marshals in Sacramento, once with the FBI in New York, and then the Marshals in New York.
And you'll do it once again. Well, let's hope you don't have to do it once again. But if you are admitted into a Bureau of Prisons facility, you will be processed once again with photographs and fingerprints.
Guess third time isn't the charm.
Yeah.
Let's hope that doesn't happen.
All right.
Well, even if he's put on parole, he'll have to do it again.
All right, 212-209-2900. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Good evening. Thank you very much.
No problem.
Mr. Lama, I commend you for this, and I think you are definitely the person I can help answer this. I'm going to turn this noise down here. Hold on.
Okay.
Sorry. I guess I'm not trying to be funny, but I'm going to ask, I guess, an ethical question. I'm no computer guy at all. This scares me to death, and I'm really surprised to even be calling in. But this is so interesting because it delves into, to me, I'm wondering, would you characterize this as a guerrilla war? Because I commend you. Let me preface it that the fact that I just walked in late, so I heard that you said, hey, I did it wrong before anybody said, hey, somebody did something wrong. That's boss, okay? And I heard Mr. Emmanuel say, that's boss, too, okay?
Well, not in those words, but yeah, okay.
Okay, all right. But you understand where I'm trying to go with this is that where do you feel now with where you are? I'm not even going to deal with where they're going to think they're putting you. I'm talking about where your soul and your spirit is and what I've heard you say. You are no joke. You weren't joking when you did it. I want to talk about people who are honest like you and people who you're probably sitting in a room with who aren't quite as honest, or let's say quite as rapidly honest. You know what I'm saying? I'm trying to just this political correctness, oxymoron stuff don't work for me. What I'm asking, I'm trying to make it simple because it's bugging me out. How are we, and I don't own a computer, my daughter does, how are we as people in this country to approach this from the fact that, because I have a couple of clients who have been in prison for this years ago, and they're still doing it, and I'm noticing your sentences. I have a friend that did 7 years. You're doing 6 months. You'll probably get probation, whatever. I'm wondering, and please bear with me. I apologize for being, spacey about this, but this is really querying me. I sense and feel your commitment, but I wonder if other people that are into this, because I'm not, I don't know internet, but people who are, because I listen to your show every once in a while. I'm rarely here in the city on Wednesday. That's why it was a treat coming home. And I honestly mean that. I never thought I'd talk to you. But I'm wondering, you guys that give out this information, I'm not saying you're flippant, but are you aware, and I know you are, because if the guy is calling in who's on part of your show who knows about those vertical, poor decorating feng shui attitude they have in prisons, right? Where are you as far as your brothers in the room and on the phone and in the world that are listening to this program who are, I hope, know that in my mind, as stupid as I am, that this is not the beginning. You are an evolutionary point. That's why I commend you. But do you have the backing of the so-called, what are we going to do tonight? Well, let's break into NASA.
Have you reached the end of the question?
I'm very sorry.
No,
I really want, because I find a lot of people with highly intelligent people play games with it. Mm-hmm. And there are highly intelligent people that play games that make sense and money. And then there are people that they call criminals. I've always found the system creates the criminality. The criminal don't create the system. That's not a cop-out for anybody, but if it comes in handy, you can use it.
Okay.
I'm going to leave now, and if you can't address it, fine. Otherwise, God bless you, and I think that you're going to stay powerful.
All right.
Just
well,
don't let them break it down.
Thank you.
Thanks. Thanks for those words. I don't know. He seemed to say it pretty well, whatever it was, but do you have anything to add?
I'm not sure I entirely parsed what exactly the focus of the question was.
We have a cassette. We can study it later.
he did have a lot to say, and I'm not sure exactly how to respond on that one, but I'll percolate on that.
I think your integrity got through, all right? I think that's something he addressed, you know, that you're honest and forthright about what it is that you've done, and that's got to count for something. That's about a 50th of what he said, but, you know, I think that was the gist of it. Bernie, any comments?
No, I mean, I was difficult for me to understand through my cell phone connection everything the guy was saying, but really, I think it was where I was trying to find out from Adrian is where he is mentally right now.
That's a good question. That's a good question. I think he's answered it to a degree, but I'd like to hear specifically that.
I very much feel like, I think in general people's lives are divided into chapters, and I think that really I'm at the turning point in a chapter in my life right now, and I don't have any idea of what the future is going to hold, and I'm not sure that I necessarily want to. Tomorrow will provide a certain amount of stability in that I will know what and how, well, in what way I'll have to answer for my actions, and from there I can go about answering for them. And after that, it's largely up to me. Mm-hmm. One thing I want to do is try to minimize my role as a source for media. I've let enough reporters tell my story, and if there's one thing that I've learned from it, it's that many people come into events with a pre-existing idea of what the story is and make the events fit their idea of what that is. And that's one of the things that motivated me to go into journalism. I have seen enough mistakes, enough cutting of corners, enough overall sloppiness and ethical apathy that I want to be in a position where I can prevent that from happening to others, where I can provide a voice, where, I don't know, I can apply that sort of experience where I can take something positive from the events that led up to this.
Do you have any advice to people who might be in a similar situation as you were in the past, where they are exploring, looking for vulnerabilities, finding them?
I think it's ultimately up to everyone what they want to do with their lives. I don't have standing to tell anybody how to live. The only thing I would say to them is that, although I know that some people do, hopefully not many, but I don't think that anybody should look to me as a role model in anything. If there's anything that's important for what we do in this life, it's to bring new and novel ideas into the world, new experiences, new paths. And what I've done has been done. There's no point in repeating it. If anybody wanted to know how I would advise them to live their lives, it would be to find their own way to go about it. I don't advocate what I've done for anybody else. It hasn't even worked out all that hot for me, but I still have hope for the future.
You certainly haven't become rich from it. I mean, one of the things that guy said was there are people who make money doing this kind of thing, and
I think he was talking about, you know, internet pages or businesses. I don't think he was referring to illegal acts.
Right, right. Well, even leading to legitimate business, you know, consulting, things like that, have you been able to make any kind of business out of this kind of security detection?
I've been offered jobs in that area, and they've come from a variety of sources, from the private sector, from the military, from entities
really?
Within the military that I'd never heard of until they contacted me. And ultimately, I'm as disinterested in the private sector and security as I am in the military. I have moral qualms with both. I don't think that today's security industry is an honest industry. I think that it feeds significantly off of fear and deception. I don't want to be a part of the vulnerability of the day where there's a cottage industry and churning out problems that will never affect a real human being but have to be answered and generate more revenue. You're not going to accomplish anything really meaningful that way for the most part, and I don't want whatever course of action comes after this in my life to just be an empty churning out of money. Although I've bad-mouthed journalists a few times during the course of this segment, by no means have all of the ones that I've met been bad. I've met some very noble people, and probably a greater variety and a greater concentration than I have in many other field, than really in any other field. And while simultaneously acting as a terrible warning. It's also been an inspiration.
Has there been decent coverage, in your opinion, of the story? Have they gotten the facts right, for the most part?
Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. Actually, a lot of times they don't, but I'm of the opinion that the truth tends to itself. I think that the people that want to know what's going on are able to read between the lines, to see the truth that comes through the slant for the opinion, the various ways that acts and facts can be distorted.
What do you find that journalists tend to miss with regards to your story?
It's not so much missing things as it is inappropriate focus. And in a lot of ways, I can't blame them. There's an impulse to want to make something as appealing to a reader as possible, so it's much more interesting for them to focus in on the so-called mythos of the alleged homeless hacker than it is to focus on all of the other parts of my life. And
And they sensationalize the story.
Yeah, it's sensationalized. On occasion, things are either fabricated out of whole cloth or creatively embellished. And there was a time when that sort of thing bothered me. But if there's one thing that... Actually, if there's one out of a lot of things that I've come away from this whole process with, is that I do believe that nobody ever really gets away with anything. It always comes full circle, and that applies to both sides of the spectrum. You can't lie and not have the truth come out.
Interesting.
Yeah, I'm just curious, when you're talking about having job offers from the military and so on, would you entertain or would you have a problem if they said, look, this is going to be your sentence. We're going to have you work, you know, in a probation sense. Where you're going to work for the government for a period of time?
You know, I have no idea. It's always easy to engage in armchair moralization about various scenarios and things that we will come to in our lives, but it's ultimately hard to find yourself faced with a decision and actually have to make it. We always know what we would like to do in a specific situation, what we think would be right or appropriate of us, but when it actually comes to making the choice, the reality is usually different than what we expected, and sitting here today, I just have no idea.
Okay. Well, in less than 24 hours, you will know what your fate is as far as what the sentence handed down will be, and we all hope that works out. We have a few more minutes to take phone calls, 212-209-2900. We're here with Adrian Lamo from California, who was being sentenced tomorrow for... Various hacking crimes, I guess, is the best way to describe them, right? I mean, that's a very general term, but it involves the New York Times, and we've told the story before, and I'm sure we can get into it again in the future, too. Let's take some phone calls, though. 212-209-2900.
Okay, I just have a story for Bernie and you. Let me get it.
Okay, while you're getting it, we're going to get another call. Good evening. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Oh, it's a pleasure, believe me.
A couple of things. Your show is great. I enjoy listening to it.
Thank you.
I wanted to say to Adrian, I wish him the best of luck tomorrow when he goes for his sentencing. He sounds very sincere in what he's saying, and that's the kind of results the penal system is supposed to bring about. I admire him for it. About the analogy that Bernie made earlier about your cell phone, somebody taking your cell phone and using it at night when you're not charged for calls, I don't think it's quite accurate. He used the analogy of you giving your cell phone to somebody and then...
Well, I'm going to say that somebody took it and then returned it. I don't recall exactly what I said.
Okay. But surely if you didn't know about it, you would want to find out who was using your cell phone so that you would prevent them from perhaps using it when it would cost you money. And I think when a system gets hacked, part of the expense that the company goes to find out who it is that's responsible ends up being included in the calculation of the cost. I'm not sure about that, but I would just guess that.
Well, there's another thing, too, that I just thought of, that if you did lend somebody your cell phone, and even though it didn't cost money, you still have to worry about what the person might have done with the cell phone in your name, for instance, making prank calls to the White House with your caller ID. You know, the worry of what could have happened is very much a part of computer security people when they detect an intrusion. It may not have caused any damage. It may not have actually adversely affected something. But what could it have done? What might have been planted? You know, the sleepless nights trying to figure out exactly what it was that actually happened when you don't really know. And yeah, you can't really put a price on that, I suppose, but I could sort of understand what, you know, what they're saying.
Well, for example, if you were in charge of security on a system and there was signs of a break-in and you had to spend 100 hours trying to track that down, that's part of the cost, I would think.
If you don't mind, I'd like to jump in. And that is true. But one thing, and I know I keep saying, you know, one thing that I've gotten out of this, there are a lot of one things I've gotten out of this, but one that always sticks out when I hear people talking about it is that it's very difficult to make valid analogies, and certainly the people that run systems would be concerned, just like the owner of the cell phones would be concerned, and I don't deny that that's an aspect of damage, but your computer is not your car, it's not your cell phone, it's not your garage, it's not somebody going through your bedroom, it's not somebody climbing in your bathroom window, it's not somebody hot-wiring your car and taking it for a test drive. It's a unique scenario, it's a computer. It's unlike really any other analogizable scenario in human history. And to make analogies for it really is only to distort the process. It's easy to make analogies because it helps people understand things better, but ultimately it always takes away from the process of reason.
Mm-hmm.
That's just my two cents. I've had something sort of a vendetta against analogies for a while now.
Yeah, the other thing I hear in a lot of the statements you're making, it provides a contrast to a lot of the people that appear on the show that have been in similar situations. You're not blaming the law. You're not blaming the people who are prosecuting you. You're taking full responsibility for what you're doing, and that's admirable.
They're all doing what they feel they should do, and that's their right, and in fact, that's their duty.
Mm-hmm.
And where I sit now, my right and my duty is to take responsibility for my actions. Ultimately, things tend to themselves like that.
Yeah. Again, I commend you for it, and I wish you, again, the best of luck in your sentencing.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks for your call.
Thank you.
And see if we can squeeze in a couple more. 212-209-2900. Good evening. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead. You're on the air.
Oh, fantastic. I got so many business signals. I was surprised. I had a couple of quick questions. First question is there a good place to read on the web a little more details? Because, you know, just on the show, it's a little unclear, and obviously this isn't a good time to review everything, but is there a website that would tell us a little more about Adrian's case and how we could, you know, support him and whatever, or even just to get the details? And
get the details, yeah. Adrian.
That website would be Google, really. I try not to point anybody at any one source of information.
All right, that's fine. And but how do you spell your last name?
Lamo, L-A-M-O, and Adrian is A-D-R-I-A-N. And if you want to see the sort of the loyal opposition to the government, if you will, you can go to freelamo.com and freelamo.org. And conversely, there's a copy of the complaint against me somewhere on findlaw.com, and I believe it's linked to from freelamo.com.
Oh, thank you. And another question, sort of RF-related. The water company in my neighborhood has decided to place RF transmitters on the meters, and it's transmitting at 910 to 920 megahertz spread spectrum.
Did you write into the show?
I did, and I hadn't received back, but I was just wondering if you had any comment on this. Is there any danger, or is this interfering that I don't know about? I'm reading the specs right now. It's from the Neptune water.
Yeah, we did reply to you. I don't know why you didn't.
Maybe I just haven't seen it yet. But in any case, I was just wondering, because it's transmitting every 7 to 10 seconds. Continuously.
Yeah, we actually replied to you in great detail. So
okay,
check your email, and just to, for the listeners.
Yeah, for the listeners.
It didn't seem like you really had anything to worry about, unless the water company also connected this device to your phone line as a backup communications channel, which I would freak out about.
Right. No, they didn't do anything like that. I can vouch for their purity on that level.
Okay.
They came in today.
It's a spread spectrum device, so it's very unlikely to interfere with other spread spectrum devices, which by their nature are designed to not interfere with each other. Like your a cordless phone that operates in that same range. The 902 to 928 range is an unlicensed Part 15 FCC allocation for frequencies that many cordless phones and other cordless devices use, including these water company meters. So, It's really very low power. It's really not good. It just runs off a couple of batteries, probably.
there's really no implication to your privacy unless it's connected to your phone line or had a microphone in it, then I would worry.
Right. No, I don't imagine it has anything like that. The only thing I would imagine is that, I guess I was concerned since it's now a public, a public radio broadcast coming from my house and, you know, continually broadcasting. And, you know, so, and by the way, for some reason, I did not get your reply, which is bizarre. So,
well, if you write us again, I'll send it to you again.
Okay. That'd be great.
All right.
But in any case, yeah, it's just kind of amazing. I mean, you know, the technology, and now here we are. You know, so they're just going to drive by, and they're just going to click a little gun, and they'll catch my water meter from that, which is, I guess,
if
more
you're worried
convenient
about the privacy of your water consumption figures, then you would have reason to worry. Frankly, I don't really care.
Of course, the water company tends to know that anyway, but now I guess anybody else who knows how that device works might have access to that information.
But similarly, anyone sufficiently interested could go up to a conventional type meter and look at it just the same as the water
That's
company
true.
Does.
I understand the concern with having little devices transmitting information, but as Bernie says, this is nothing to be worried about. Okay, we'll see. We'll see. Thanks for that call. Jim, you had something?
I was just going to say that it's possible that the police could look at these figures and find out he's illegally growing fish in the basement.
Well, wasn't there a case in California where a family...
I was watching Cops last night.
Uh-huh.
They raided somebody because the power company told the police, Multnomah County, Oregon, I believe, told the police that the guy was using way over the electricity for the one family house, and they figured, aha, marijuana growing. They went in, son of a gun, and the guy is growing marijuana under grow lights.
See, on that program, Cops, they always show the people who are guilty. They don't show the people that have their doors kicked in who are innocent, like
there's
happened in
no
New York last week.
No excitement to that.
No, there's also a lot of legal problems with that. But they always show the cops acting as gods, you know, and they're never incorrect. Here's a story out of California, I believe, Carlsbad. When people noticed Dina Dagey's family was spending $250 to $300 a month on electricity, they suspected a marijuana farm was flourishing under high-intensity lights inside their home. What they found when they showed up with a drug-sniffing dog and a search warrant was a wife and mother who does several loads of laundry a day, keeps a dishwashing machine going, has three electricity-guzzling computers, and three kids who cannot remember to turn the lights out when they leave a room. See what can happen, kids? If you don't turn the lights out, you might have the cops kicking in your door. It's hard to believe a high utility bill would be enough to issue a state warrant, she said. She's demanding the police department issue a written apology. So far, they have not done so. But these systems, you know, $250, that's not even a high bill around here. In Long Island, certainly it's not.
The cost of power varies greatly.
It does. But, to just have that information and use that as the basis for a warrant is really kind of shocking.
Sounds like she should take some steps to conserve energy, though.
Yeah. I mean, you know, if those are the conservation dogs going into your house, sniffing around, telling you that you could be saving power here, okay, granted, that's legitimate. But, don't accuse somebody of marijuana growing when it's not happening. Okay.
In that scenario, did you say that the power company itself was the ones that contacted the police?
I believe it was the power companies. Authorities, you know what? They don't say how they found out. They say when authorities noticed how high the bill for the Daggy home was, they sent the police dog to the suburban. They sent the police dog on his own to go and investigate in the suburban San Diego neighborhood, and it reacted as though it had smelled drugs.
Well,
check that dog out before you check anyone
out. I hope the power company told the police, because the alternative is that the police are reading your bill directly.
Well, this is an Associated Press story. There is nothing in this story that I see that indicates the power company is the one that told. They say when authorities noticed how high the bill was. So
I'm not sure which alternative is worse, though. I'm not sure I want my power company acting as an agent of the state, and it would really raise questions of whether it's an illegal search if they're acting as an agent of the state.
Yeah. Especially since you're paying them money anyway.
The other piece of evidence they found was that she, like, throws out her garbage or something. This was deemed to be suspicious.
Yeah, yeah. That
I remember that
suspicious.
Specifically they said she threw out her garbage shortly before pickup, a tactic allegedly frequently used by people with something to hide to keep the cops from digging through their trash.
Yeah, of course. You have something to hide if you do that. Okay, that brings us to the end of our special two-hour program. Again, if you've been tuning in, hoping to hear the Personal Computer Show, well, obviously you didn't. It will be back again next week at 9 o'clock. At 8 o'clock, and we'll be back again next week at 7 o'clock with another edition of Off the Hook. We've been here with Adrian Lima for the last couple of hours, who's being sentenced tomorrow in federal court here in New York. And hopefully, Adrian, you'll get to go back to California soon, unless you want to spend more time in New York, sightseeing and that kind of thing. I want to thank you for coming down and talking to us on the eve of this momentous event, and I hope this latest chapter in your life is a productive one.
Well, thanks for having me, and all I can do is wonder whether the judge is out there somewhere in Radio Land.
Everyone's out there in Radio Land somewhere, so good luck. Best of luck, and of course, next week we'll report on what happened. All right, Manuel Galsin for Off the Hook. See you next week.
Trumpet of Freedom, the one-man play has been extended. The play is at St. Mark's in the Bowery, 2nd Avenue and 10th Street. Performances will be on April 4th, 11th, 18th, May the 2nd and 16th at 4:30 p.m. The reservation number is 718-784-0905. That's 718-784-0905. Or visit our website at www.wbworks.com/John Brown. That's wbworks.com/John Brown.
You're listening to WBAI Radio in New York, 99.5 FM.